CITR Water 1.9 FM. I think someone's calling on my other line, but I am bringing someone on the phone on the line now, so I'm sorry for not answering your call. I am joined this week by Joe Ullman. I got you there, Joe?
Yeah, I'm here.
Awesome. Okay, I didn't screw up on the board or nothing. Today we're going to talk about Joe's new book, This Will End in Tears, and we're just listening to a tearful song, Love Will Tear Us Apart by Joy Division. It's a sad song and a sad band, eh? The lady who has the show before me is actually crying now because of...
Oh, that's what I love to do. Inspire tears, yeah.
Inspire tears.
Yeah.
You do art direction for Yoga Magazine, but on the side, bring tears to everyone.
Well, we try, yes.
It's a fun balance in life, I guess.
Yeah, oh, definitely, yeah.
So your new book, You're Coming to Vancouver... I'm going to mention this a lot.
Okay, good.
On Saturday, November 11th, to do a launch with Andy Brown for both of your books from Insomniac Press. Mm-hmm. Yours, This Will All End in Tears by Joe Ullman. And Andy Brown's The Mole Chronicles, which I read about the first quarter of and I quite enjoyed.
Yeah, it's quite good.
It's really interesting. It's, you know, he really gets in... I don't know if it's like autobiographical or what, but it really tells from... As a Vancouverite, it's a nice Vancouver story... I really get into. So it's a neat thing. You're launching it with a book. Now, are you friends with Andy?
Yeah, Andy published my second book, the Big Book of Wag, last year. And I've been friends with him for some time since I moved to Montreal. And he's the publisher of the Conundrum Press, and he publishes a lot of comic and graphic artists and a lot of novelists as well. And
Conundrum, that's, I think Mark Bell just had a book put out.
Mark Bell just did a book through Conundrum, right? The
Nagadod.
Nagadod, yeah, right.
Yeah, a very
and
Mark
Andy
Bell
Andy Brown
name.
Is like a Leviathan, a mensch who just publishes people's books all the time. And he finally got his own book published, so it's kind of nice. And it's a great book too. I mean, I just finished reading it on the train the other day, and it was wonderful. I was surprised because I know him, and I was around while he was writing a lot of it. Like we go to that 3-day novel writing weekend.
Oh, were you?
So he'd be writing this stuff, and it seemed like insane stream of consciousness rubbish. Like we'd be reading Jughead comics, and he would incorporate that into his story, and I think this is never going to be coherent. And then reading it all makes sense in the end. So it's pretty cool to see.
Let's talk about your book.
Okay.
Promote that since that's what you're going to be in town for. Now you've been working on this for quite some time. Like you've had the book of Wag. You're saying came out last year.
Yeah, that's just like reprinting this zine stuff that I've done for like the last like 15 years. These little books, Wag. They're these little square, 4-inch square, perfect bound little books that I've been doing for years. And Andy wanted to collect them all in a big format so that it was more legible. People could read it without a magnifying glass and stuff. So we did that. But it was all just, I mean, it was it's all old material. So all it was writing introductions and designing the book and that. So it wasn't a big deal. But yeah, I've been working on this book for about, oh my God, since I finished my other book for Insomniac, Chewing on Tinfoil, which was like in 2001. And then I just kind of been farting around and lying on the couch and eating a lot of chips and not doing anything. And then in the last year, Mike from Insomniac wanted me to, he wanted to publish this book, so I had to get a move on and get it drawn, so I was like working a lot.
He wanted it, hours. Yeah. Wanted it finished.
Yeah, so that's it. If you don't have a deadline, most cartoonists won't bother doing anything.
I think Joe Matt is the prime example of that.
Right.
His new Peep Show just came out this week, and that's the first issue in about, I guess, 3-4 years.
Yeah, how can he do that? Does he survive on that, do you think?
I don't know.
I wonder.
I think the man is so cheap,
mm-hmm.
he can survive on nothing.
Okay, so he might be surviving on one issue every 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I guess he's got backlog money from back when he did coloring work, but
yeah, okay,
even his coloring work I don't think is very much stuff. But let's talk about your work. Who cares about Joe Matt?
We keep going away. I'm so modest.
I'll talk to Joe Matt next year sometime.
Yeah, okay.
Now, it's 5 stories. When you originally started putting together this book, did you have in mind to have, okay, I want to have a bunch of really sad stories in a book, and that's it? Or is it just kind of each story worked in its own? You're like, hey, this is a good story. I want to do this little one, this longer one, and just kind of came together organically?
The only thing that I had at the beginning was I wanted them to be longer stories than the last book, because the last book had like 9 stories. It was about the same amount of pages, but 9 stories. So I wanted to try and do longer stories to slowly go towards, doing a full-length graphic novel, because most publishers don't want to publish collections of short story comics, because they don't really know how to. They say that's not a graphic novel, and that's the buzzword, but a graphic novel. So if they see,
it's not the next mouse.
Yeah, that's it. If it's a collection of graphic short stories, they go, oh yeah, we don't know what to do with that, and we're not interested. So I'm a kind of a whore, and I'd like to sell, a book and make money, hopefully one day. But I'd like to do a full length book that would be more, potentially sellable. But anyway, the idea was just to write longer stories. The fact that they're sad is like that's just the kind of stuff that I write. I think it was what I was my state of mind at the time, probably.
They weren't all written at the same time. They were kind of put together over time, like this one kind of came up. Or were you working simultaneously on the same stories?
Usually I have, I had sketches of the plots for all of them. So I knew what was going to happen, and then it was just kind of like working on the narration and the dialogue and that. I mean, I generally, the way I work is I'll write like a straight up like short story, like just like a text short story. And then I'll chop that up. Like I'll just physically get the printout of it and cut it up with mark it up with a marker, and chop it up and keep the narration I want to use and then take the dialogue that I want to use and adapt it that way. So it's almost like I'm adapting my own short stories into comics, I guess. But that's how I've always done it, so that's how I continue to do it.
So not necessarily the old panel format, this panel, it's just kind of like you get an idea of what the story is, and then kind of fill it out as you go along.
Yeah, I basically write it as a short story, then turn it into a comic. Like I don't write it like, if you're writing a proper comic script, it's more like a film script, with mm-hmm. descriptions of the panels and that. And I don't usually do that until after I've broken the script down and I break it into panels.
I've always found comic scripts incredibly boring to read too. So
oh my god, yeah. I mean, I've been drawing other people's comics and they're professionally scripted kind of things, and I just find that the guys that are writers, they're just writers. They don't draw.
Yeah.
They describe incredibly complex and impossible things to draw, like in panels, like just incredible details. And I was talking to another cartoonist the other day, and he was lamenting the same thing. And he said the best thing that he ever had was when they were describing to him to draw a poker game going on and show everyone's hands at the table. And he was like, yeah, okay, well, that's impossible. Yeah,
you'd have to do like some kind of weird overhead camera shot.
Yeah, it would have to be. That would be the only way you could do it, yeah. But anyway.
Comics are a mess.
Oh, they are.
Yeah. So the one thing I really like, they're sad stories, but they're not apologetically sad stories.
Okay.
If you know what I'm saying, it's like you're not trying to really pull at our heartstrings.
Oh no.
It's just these are.
Oh no, they're quite the opposite. I try and like balance it so that I'm not drawn to stories that are like goofy and happy and that. I mean, so I like the kind of that raw sad stuff, but I also don't want to make it maudlin at all. So I try and like temper it with like a bit of sarcasm and that sort of thing. So yeah, I I'm glad that you feel that, because I would hope that they wouldn't be kind of any kind of violin playing while you're reading them,
But they're all kind of different in their own aspect. Like the first one just kind of seems like the Big Boned. It's almost like a lashback. The character is just like so fed up with everyone.
Yeah,
and it's not necessarily sadness about her physical, appearance, more just the sadness of like other people's interactions with it.
Yeah, that's just like one aspect of it. The fact that she's an overweight girl, and she outwardly is very polite, and she's carrying on this inner dialogue and her dealings with everyone of like just like seething rage. And someone was asking me that, how can you write from the perspective of an overweight girl? And I said, well, it's not just that aspect of it. I have a lot of seething rage that I can identify with, so it came very easily, you know. But I was nervous doing that because, you know, it's the whole idea of misappropriation of voice. But I feel like, I don't know, I mean, none of those characters are me, so, you know, I feel that it's okay to just try and honestly represent whatever character you're trying to write, really. So I don't feel too bad.
But there's characteristics of yourself
utilized
within the storytelling format.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's the main character. There's like always one character that kind of looks like me, the goateed guy with glasses. That's usually
like the brother.
Yeah. That's sort of what I look like, and I'm sort of that character. So there's always aspects of it, but none of the stuff is autobiographical. People always read this stuff, and then they think, oh, I know.
You're horrible.
You're a horrible monster. You're a drunkard. Well, that part is autobiographical, but the other aspects are not. Like, I mean, so it's not. I mean, there's always little bits and pieces in there that are of me, but not necessarily. And in fact, one of the stories, the story "Oh Deer," where the guy goes hunting and shoots a deer, I purposely made the guy look like me, and I wanted people to think, "Oh my God, Joe's gone hunting and killed a deer and let it rot in his garage." And that never happened. I've never held a gun or gone hunting or anything like that. So, but I kind of thought that would be fun to do, and have people think that.
Kind of, you're adding new stuff to your stories just to shake people up, I guess.
Oh sure, yeah.
Now, the one story that really stuck out to me as probably my favorite is the Hangover, the one about the character and his brother, and just kind of like, you really just seem so blunt and honest. I mean, a lot of people create stories and go for that, like we're talking before, about just pulling the heartstrings, you know, making the characters lovable. But it's just so great that he's so honest. And, you know, you're reading it, you're like, oh, what's he doing? Come on.
Yeah.
But then the same part, like, well, what would you be thinking if you're in the same situation? Do you really want to be put in that position that he's in?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like, I guess it's that kind of unwanted responsibility. And then you have, if you don't take on unwanted responsibility or things that you know you should take on, then you have to deal with the guilt of not taking care of business that you're responsible for. So he's kind of doing that, and this character in this story is like, had to deal with he's got a really messed up family, a lot of alcoholics, and his brother is mentally challenged, and so he's, and his mother is like, has broken her hip, and she's like a demented, like she's drunken herself into a state of dementia, and now she can't take care of the other brother, and he has to do it, and he's just like, he spends the whole story just trying to get out of doing that, and kind of, comes to a bit of terms with it at the end. I mean, he's still feeling guilty, obviously, but he's going to try harder to be more involved with his brother, though not directly taking care of him. So.
Be a part
yeah,
of
but I think I love that kind of honesty that makes you squirm, I guess, kind of is good. Rather than, it's more interesting than I don't know, someone.
Something Disney-esque.
Yeah, being noble and doing that. I mean, that's the ending of that thing, like when he's talking about it, and then he's talking about how he's going to, you know, try and help get his mom's act together, and then he visit his brother more, and he shows his brother running through the field chasing a butterfly with a net, and then he says he's going to help his mother more, and then the mother's in the panel with them running, and they're all chasing butterflies with nets. I kind of wanted to like juxtapose what he's talking about with this like really ridiculous cliched image of people just chasing butterflies or something, you know.
The juxtaposition between the happiness and just the.
Well, just the fact that he knows it's not going to be like that at all. I mean, they're probably all going to be in homes, and except for him. And
it's such a great use of imagery because you got him on that page, you know, just disheveled in his tidy whiteies, sitting in the bed, just looking like crap, balanced with the brother who's, you know, mentally challenged. So I'm trying to be politically correct. I'm not politically correct all the time. Who's clean and put together.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting juxtaposition, like, as well, just that, you know, here's someone who should have his life together and doesn't have his life together.
Right.
And the brother who, you know, I don't know, shouldn't.
Yeah. He outwardly has things somewhat together. I mean, yeah, he's limited as to what he can do, but he's got his stuff way more together than the capable brother. Yeah, for sure.
Now, I think we're going to take a quick music break.
Okay.
I'm going to play the Bowie Owe You Pretty Things.
Oh, great.
And then maybe we'll get back. We'll talk a little bit about your musical choices because it's something different that most people don't talk about. We'll talk about some more stories in the book and yak about comics.
Okay, great.
So please hold CITR 101.9 Inkstuds. I'm joined by Joe Ullman, who will be in town Saturday at the Helen Pitt Gallery. I should get the address. What is the address? Oh, I'll get the address when I'm back on air. It's in Gastown. David Boy, Owe You Pretty Things.
Some clothes, shake up your bed, put another log on the fire for me. I made some breakfast and coffee. Look out my window, what do I see? A crack in the sky and a hand reaching down to me. All the nightmares came today, and it looks as though they're here to stay. What are we coming to? No room for me, no fun for you. I think about a world to come where the books were found by the golden ones, written in pain, written it all by a puzzled man who questioned what we were here for. All the strangers came today, and it looks as though they're here. See their faces in golden rays. Don't kid yourself, they belong to you. They're the start of the coming race. The other's a bitch, we finished our news. Homo sapiens have outgrown their use. All the strangers came today, and it looks as though they're here to stay.
Bowie. That's going to be my favorite era of Bowie music.
Yeah, it's amazing.
The Hunky Dory and Ziggy Stardust and the rest. I like it, but it just doesn't have that same, I don't know.
Space Oddity is equally good to those two, I think. Don't you think?
I like Space Oddity about half and half.
Okay.
No, I like it, but not as Hunky Dory is just...
Yeah, it's a brilliant, beautiful
perfect
thing.
So.
And David Bowie is probably the most superhuman, cool person on the planet. I love him very much.
I was just watching, do you ever watch Extras?
Yeah, that's the song, the Ricky Gervais thing, yeah.
It's
incredible.
Yeah, it's
chubby little fat man.
Yeah, the pug nose.
Yeah.
No, I was like, it's the best Bowie song in like 30 years.
It's pretty amazing, yeah.
Well, we are yakking with Joe Ullman, author, writer, artist, creator of This Will All End in Tears, as well as Chewing on Tinfoil. It was like escaping my mind for a sec. Your book from 2001, released from Insomniac Press. This Saturday, Joe will be in town joined by Andy Brown at the Helen Pitt Gallery, which is at 148 Alexander Street, right in Gastown. Super easy to get to. I used to live like a block from there a while ago. It's a nice little spot, like right behind by the railway tracks and stuff.
Great.
Yeah, nice little area. Launching the new book, we're just yakking about. We were talking about some of the stories. Now, one thing I really enjoy in your work is the faces. Is what were some of the influences for drawing faces like? Because that's really well refined, like just a way to really like do different types of faces, and it's just so much character in the faces and emotion.
Okay. Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, Mad Magazine. The guys like in there, like Mort Drucker and Jack Davis, and those guys were a big influence when I was a kid. I mean, I just still am in awe of how those guys can draw.
Oh, I know. Faces. Jack Davis just doesn't stop. I was at an art gallery in New York a couple of weeks ago, and they had the Fantagraphics art show, and then went downstairs. There's another art show, and there's a Jack Davis painting in there.
Yeah.
So that was like my favorite part.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just really insanely incredible. That was a great era of like for illustration, the 50s and the 60s. I'm just like kind of always blown away when I look at stuff from that time period.
Now, are you a Mad and EC fan or more EC?
Less EC. I mean, I read some of that stuff, like, in the reprints. You know, it's all the same stuff. I like that old horror comics, I have to confess, and I like old radio plays, like all that kind of goofy stuff, and old horror movies. But mostly Mad. I think Mad is, like, one of the most formative influences in my whole life, probably. Just that kind of don't trust anything, and it's just sort of like an early kind of thing that made me so cynical in life, just questioning advertising, questioning everything, making fun of everything that that society presents as, you know, normal and whatever. I think it was a great influence, Mad.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm a long time Mad reader.
Yeah.
I felt fortunate enough to meet El Feldstein when he was in Vancouver.
Oh, really?
Was it last year or earlier this year? I can't remember, but quite the gentleman. He now lives on a ranch in Montana with llamas.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's quite neat. Gone from being, you know, the second highest paid editor, or maybe even the highest paid editor, right, magazine editor in New York, to living on a farm.
A llama rancher.
Mm. Yeah, llama rancher. I guess it's like a refuge, like, you know, rescued animals and stuff, so.
Okay. Wow.
It's really neat.
Well,
yeah.
That's cool. Otherwise, I don't know. You know, I mean, I love how Dan Klaus draws faces. I think some of the issues of 8-Ball, I'm still kind of like, I can read them over and over again, and I just love them.
I can actually, yeah, now that you mention that, I can kind of see that kind of like that Velvet Glove era.
Yeah.
Like later, like I'd say like around the 10s.
Yeah.
Like 9,
I mean,
10,
yeah,
11.
I mean, that was a great period. Some of his later stuff, I'm less in awe of the drawing style. I think his writing is still wonderful. Like the superhero issue recently.
Oh, the Death Ray. Yeah,
yeah, it was incredible. So good. But it's somehow his inking has gotten smoother or something, and his figures almost look boneless at times. They don't seem to have a structure underneath them that makes sense sometimes. But I mean, he's still utterly brilliant, and I shouldn't criticize him. Good.
I just wish he'd do more comics.
Yeah.
Enough movies.
Yeah. I know, I haven't seen the movie. I wasn't that enamored with Ghost World, but I didn't think it was a great adaptation of the comic.
Yeah, well, it was a different story, but...
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
I'll say it now. Don't worry about seeing Art School Confidential.
Okay, that's what I thought. When I heard there was a serial killer plot introduced, I was a little nervous.
And you figured out right away. You got to be really dumb not to get the movie.
Yeah.
Sorry if people listening to this that didn't get the movie. But Mad Magazine, Daniel Klaus, all great influences. Now, where was your art training?
Oh, boy. None, really. I went to community college, Mohawk College in Hamilton, Ontario, and I went there for a year for a graphic arts program, which was like a very... The year that I went through the program was the last year that they did it old school. This is in about 1980, I don't know, 83 or something like that. And when I graduated from that, the last 2 weeks of our program, they showed us something that was called desktop publishing. And they said it's this new thing that might come in. And Anyway, you basically just saw that everything you had learned about airbrushing photos and retouching photos and doing, you know, cross-hatching drawings and all this stuff and paste up and all of that was kind of completely obsolete. So it was kind of, that was my formal training, which actually was kind of fun because we did learn, like, you know, we were illustrating, like, we would illustrate a bottle of whiskey and then shoot it on a process camera and then put it into an ad and paste up the type around it and everything, like super old school design stuff, which was kind of fun.
That's neat. Michel Rebelliotti, I probably mispronounced his name. I'm very Anglo. Similar experience, I think, in one of his Paul books he went to.
Yeah, the typography, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's talking about it with his dad in the typography.
Well, no, it was another story where he actually talked about his art school training.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't read that.
I think that's a Paul Moves Out book.
Okay, yeah.
And he goes through a similar experience where he goes to an older style school. Mm. Meanwhile, you know, everyone's learning something different, but he's learning from all these old guys.
Right.
These techniques, which are obsolete, but it's just a neat artistic thing.
Well, it's kind of reflected in his drawing style. His drawing style is very kind of angular and kind of stylized, like a lot of 60s illustration, really. It has an old school kind of look to it.
A certain, like, kind of Tintin Pop
type
of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was chewing on tinfoil your first real foray into comics?
Yeah, that was my first, I had been doing the little wag books and just drawing comics in newspapers. I did a strip in the Hamilton Spectator for about 5 years. It was a weekly strip. And it's a pretty big newspaper in Hamilton. It's like, but that was good. That was like a regular gig and got me some exposure and stuff. And then Exclaim, the paper, the music paper. You guys get that out there, right?
Yep.
Well, I did a strip in there for, for about 5 years as well. I think I can only do things for 5 years and then I get fired generally. It was like Exclaim, they fired, they stopped running comics all at once.
Boo.
Yeah, I know. It was sad. Because it was great that they had, I mean, the comics kept getting smaller and smaller. I mean, when they used to run them back in the day, and they were giant, like full page. It was crazy and beautiful. But it was really nice. I mean, they you know, it was a national forum, so I got a lot of weird work out of that, like illustration work for these scientists at the Canadian Museum of Nature in Ottawa. They were big fans of me from the Exclaim, and they hired me to illustrate this book on handling plant specimens, which is bizarre. But if you go to the national or this museum of nature in Ottawa, you can get this book that has my illustrations in it.
I've never
actually seen it, but they paid me well, so it was good.
I think that's kind of similar. What happens with Seth a lot? He does a lot of spot illos for like academic stuff and a lot of like law review things he was telling me.
Okay, yeah.
It was odd. And then now you have the yoga magazine you're an art director for.
Right, yeah. I've been doing that for about 5 years too. I think I'll be fired soon by my track record. Yeah, I do that, which is kind of fun. It's the yoga magazine. It's quarterly and it's not a traditional yoga magazine. It's more about the spiritual aspects of yoga, less than the physical habits.
So you're not filled with Lululemon ads?
No, we don't have those, but we probably would like to have them because that would help pay for the magazine. That would be good. If they would have us, we'd have them for sure. But yeah, we're less about the physical stuff and more about like social action. We write a lot about our writers write about everything. I mean, it's like, we have this thing, our unofficial tagline is it's all yoga, baby. And it's like basically people can find any kind of connection to some sort of centering and practice or whatever the practice is, you know, they can write about it in our magazine. And sometimes, you know, it'll be like, it's all over the place. But anyway, the nice thing about the magazine is I have a chance of hiring and sneaking in cartoonists that I like, which has been good. We have this regular strip of this Montreal cartoonist, Billy Mimbreas, who does this two-page beautiful pencil, like, detailed pencil illustration of this character, Boy Priest. And it's really fun. And the other thing that I'm really kind of, can't even believe it's happening, is I've got Robert Sikoriak in the magazine adapting the Bhagavad Gita, which is this ancient yogic text. And he's illustrating it as the Peanut gang. They're like Krishna and all these other characters, and it's pretty cool how he's doing it. And I just wrote to him and asked him if he would do it, and he was like, oh yeah, man, I'm a yoga practitioner, I'd love to do it. And I was like stunned that he would do it, because I'm a big fan of Sikoria.
That's pretty awesome. And just so people know who he is, because you were telling us on the phone, and it's like, kind of the name didn't click for me, but he used to be one of the editors for Raw Magazine, you're
That's
saying.
Right, yeah.
And also in that, what was it, the Hotwire?
Yeah, he's been in Hotwire, and he's also had stuff on John, The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He's done a lot of work for them. Yeah, like I think
everyone watches The Daily Show.
The controversy about the Muhammad cartoons, and they had these fake cartoons that I can't remember the details of them, but he can mimic any style. Like, he's just incredible how he sends me roughs of his strips. About two or three weeks before he does them, and I'm like, these are like finished, but he comes back and then he's drawn them entirely again, and they're incredible. Like, he's very, very detail oriented and just amazing. And the thing he always does, he does that pastiche of, like, he takes like a classical piece of literature and then some sort of pop comic strip characters, and then combines the two. And like, he'll do the Metamorphosis as Charlie Brown, good old Gregor Samsa. And he does it flawlessly. Like, he gets both aspects perfect. So the satire is always, like, just dead on. Like, it's incredible. So, yeah. So that's it. And we've had Joe Sacco let us use some of his illustrations in the magazine for a piece we were doing on Bosnia. And who else did I have in there? Oh, well, Dave Collier.
He's one of your pull quotes on the back.
Oh yeah, Dave Collier is he's one of my favorite cartoonists.
He's a Canadian legend.
I was living in Hamilton, and I just phoned him one day and said, "Can I drop off my book?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure." And he's amazing. He's just like such a nice guy, and he'll talk to anyone. And he's so good. And he's done a lot of illustrations in the magazine. He's great.
That's quite funny, because one of the people who helps me with the show sometimes, Robin Bougie, used to be neighbors with him in Saskatchewan.
Okay, yeah.
So I've heard many good stories. And
Collier's amazing. He's as strange as his books, but he's wonderful and just like completely unpretentious and just so cool. Man, one of the nicest people I know.
Gotta appreciate that.
Yeah.
No, his stuff is great, and everyone should check it out.
Yeah.
I'm going to play the Tom Waits track.
Okay.
The, what was it? Please Call Me Baby. What album was that off of?
I think that's Heart of Saturday Night, maybe.
I think that's right.
Yeah, around that period. Another
sad song.
Oh.
Oh, You Pretty Things isn't a sad song,
no,
is it?
No, it's not that song.
How could you be sad listening to that song?
That's true.
If it was Quicksand, then I'd say that's a
That's true. That would have been song. More appropriate sad. Okay.
CITR 101.9 FM, this is Inkstead Show. I'm joined by Joe Ullman, who will be at the Pitt Gallery on Saturday, Helen Pitt Gallery at 148 Alexander Street. And we'll be back in a sec.
I ain't no angel, I admit that I ain't no saint. You're selfish and I'm cruel, but you're blind. If I exercise my devils, well, my angels may leave too. When they leave, they're so hard to find.
CITR's very first funding drive takes off on November 10th to the 24th. And, what the hell?
I think the turntable's broken. Let's try again with the CD player.
Sure.
CITR funding drive promo, take two.
CITR 101.9 FM presents its very first fun drive. It takes off on November 10th to the 20th. Mike, what the hell? I think the CD player just blew up.
Yeah, those old CD players will do that. Do you want to try another take with human beatboxing?
I guess.
CITR funding drive promo, take three.
From November 10th to the 24th, CITR 101.9 FM is embarking on its first funding drive. This is an opportunity for you, the listener, to help make CITR even better. Your donations will help us buy new equipment, make CITR more accessible online and on the FM dial, and generally increase CITR's awesomeness. After all, do you really want to hear any more PSAs that sound like this? God, stop!
Oh, okay. For more information, visit CITR.ca.
Yay, funding drive. We need money. Give us money. Next week, or it starts tomorrow. This is Inkstead, CITR 101.9 FM. I am joined by Joe Ullman. We just finished up a conversation about his new book, This Will All End in Tears, and promoting your launch on Saturday with Andy Brown at the Helen Pitt Gallery, 8 p.m., 148 Alexander Street. I was going to be joined today by Mr. Sean Cranberry of the old Sophia Books fame, but he had to work. Yeah, I got a message from him this morning. Boo to him.
Yes.
Who wants to work?
Oh, no, not me.
I got to go to work after this, actually, unfortunately. No. I don't want to work, but occasionally I have to.
Oh, yeah.
Once again, boo to work. So, was that the Tom Waits song? It didn't sound like Tom Waits. Was that the right song?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Tom Waits. Yeah, that's
a, it's pre...
That's an old one, yeah, very old. That's good. Bad. Yeah.
It was good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Oh, good. So can I tell people about what we're going to do at this
Let's hear about it.
Freak out that's happening. When I did my first book tour, I did a book tour across Canada with Jim Munro. And this was for my first book, and I was like a comic, so you can't do a reading, so because you're just kind of describing what's going on in the panels and that. So I decided to put on a puppet show. So I built puppets and I built a fold up stage that and we went to 13 cities across Canada in 15 days. So it was like a rock and roll thing, except it was with puppets. And so we put on the puppet show. I acted out parts of the book. So that was fun, but it was like so much work, and I'm older and more jaded and don't have any energy, so I wanted to do something that would not be a reading, but it was something at least a little different. So I've blown up giant panels from one of the stories, and I hired a 14-year-old boy to read the disturbing story of a man that is going through a midlife crisis and shoots a deer. And then any of the parts that were like sort of too disturbing for a kid to read, I just jump in and read those parts. So I have this recording. I put like little post-it notes over those panels so that he wouldn't have to read them. So that's what we're going to be doing at the show. That's what I'm going to be doing. Andy Brown's going to just do his reading, and he's going to have some sort of projected imagery madness going on.
Of moles.
Yeah. So that's me. I'm just going to be holding up sheets of paper while this recording is playing of a boy reading this story. So, yeah. So that's what's going to happen.
That sounds fun.
Well, it should be fun. I mean, a puppet show would have been a hell of a lot more fun, but I just didn't do it. Maybe the next book.
The next tour. The next cross-Canada tour.
Yeah, maybe.
Do you make it over to Vancouver often?
Once in a while. I do. I mean, I did on that tour, and I've been out there a couple times since then. But.
Well, I hope everything goes fun on Saturday night.
Thank you.
I think it will be a memorable night.
I hope so, yeah.
Now, this will end... All End in Tears. Is it out in bookstores now, or is it going to be out?
It is, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's in bookstores and people...
And comic stores?
Yeah, comic stores too, yeah.
Check out RX Comics and Lucky's Comics, both on Main. Okay. That would be my recommendations for people. And, of course, Sophia Books, where Sean is right now. Not here.
Yep, but he's busy selling the book.
Yep, that's what we'll say.
Yep.
Pushing the book for people. And also check out Andy Brown's book, is it The Mole Chronicles? I can't remember. No, I just
The Mole Chronicles. Very good book. Highly recommend
it. Yeah, check it out. Insomniac Press. Thank you for joining us this week, Joe.
Thanks for having me, Robin.
It was a fun show. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Okay.
And I look forward to more books by you. I'm going to try and track down your, what was it, The Box of Wag?
Big
Book of Wag. I'm going to check out that.
Okay.
Because I know my local comic store gets Condon Press.
Andy Brown will be pleased. I think he has the cases and cases of them.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
and he was, I was at SPX and I didn't even really look at the Conundrum Press.
Oh, really? Oh, he's publishing a lot of comics these days, and it's beautiful stuff. Sherry Boyle has a new book, and she's already done one with him. And watch Conundrum Press. They're starting to publish a lot of really cool graphic.
Well, I'll be checking out soon because I'm hoping Mark Bell will join us one week here at some point. And Owen Plummer is a friend of the Inksteads, too, who is also pretty involved in Nagadod. So.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
And have an excellent day.
You too.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, bye.
That was Joe Ullman, author, as I've said before, this will all end in tears. Go check him out doing an odd performance thing with his new book at the Helen Pitt Gallery on Saturday the 11th at 8 p.m. I'm tired. I gotta go to work tonight. I shouldn't have to work, should I, people? Don't forget, starting tomorrow is the Fund Drive. We put the fun into Fund Drive at CITR. We'll be giving away lots of crazy stuff if you give us money. We're not asking for a lot of money. We're just asking for money. But, you know, it pays for all sorts of good stuff, like having Inksteads on the air. How often do you get to hear us talk to great creators like Joe, Ralph Steadman a couple of weeks ago? And next week will be an awesome interview I'd already recorded, but I haven't had the chance to play it, with Mr. Jaime Hernandez, one of my favorite creators from Love and Rockets, known for the Maggie and Hopi story, or Locas, recently printed in the New York Times Funny Pages in their Sunday editions. Between first they had Chris Ware, who is always awesome, and then Jaime Hernandez, who is always awesome, and now they have Seth, who is always awesome, and Canadian. Support Canadian people. New Yorkers are supporting it too. Followed up on the 23rd by Beto Hernandez, his brother, who is also a creator of Love and Rockets. We'll be talking about his new book, Sloth, the upcoming Love and Rockets reprint collections, and the ongoing Palomar stories, including the new Ignatz book, which I picked up at the Small Press Expo, with the new Tales of Old Palomar. It's awesome. It's nice to see a return to the classic characters of which he started and blossomed into adulthood and, you know, beyond. It's quite the neat. They're both really brilliant creators, or really create such a complex narratives. There's a reason that Love and Rockets really broke through and set a lot of standards. Followed on the 30th by Mr. Ivan Brunetti to promote his new book, Masters of Comics. I can't remember. No, not Masters of Comics. Graphic Storytelling from Yale Press. We'll be yakking about it. We'll be joined, Colin will be there with me for that one. Colin will also be with me on the other interviews, as well as I'll be joined by Luke Meat, who hosts the A Noise show. I don't know if it's noise or just a noise, because it's so noisy and noising. But it's good stuff. And Ivan Brunetti is incredible. He's really come into his own with his latest issue of Schizo. It's oversized, a la Mr. Chris Ware, but still awesome. So many good comics out there. Read. I'm going to end off with Charles Mingus' Haitian Fight Song. Thanks to Joe for joining us. Up next is Crimes and Treasons. What on the West Coast, y'all?